offering courses of study leading to your certified AA through PhD, all online. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these 3 stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. I'm prayerful that you're listening very carefully to the conversation we're having with Dr. Reed Sheftall. Dr. Sheftall is talking about COVID. We asked the question at the beginning of the week, COVID, fact or fiction? And let me remind you of his book, Sanctioned, S-A-N-T-I-O-N-E-D, Sanctioned, The COVID Murders. That can be found on Amazon.com. Sanctioned, The COVID Murders. It's a frightening read. I looked at a little blurb in relationship to it, and the truth that you find there reminds me of what the Scripture says. Jesus, speaking to his disciples, said, "If you continue in my word, you're my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth. The truth shall make you free." And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, it's time that we as a nation understand the truth of the COVID lie that we were all taken through for about 4 years, 5, and still residuum of that today. So, Dr. Sheftall, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for your conversation. And let me ask you to continue your thought for our listeners. And, ladies and gentlemen, that telephone number is 904-831-0917. If you would, hang on, listen, write down your questions, and at the near the end of the broadcast, call and ask those questions as our wrap-up session today. Dr. Sheftall.
Thank you, Dr. Youngblood, once again for everything. It's been a great honor and pleasure to work with you this week and talk about this very important topic.
It's our delight.
Thank you. I finished the last segment by talking about a primer that was used and endorsed by the World Health Organization, if you can believe it or not. Mm-hmm. The primer is 18 base pairs long, and it's found in the human chromosome. So, of course, everyone that they did the test on with that primer, with that using that primer, would have been positive. Now, you may say, well, why did they want so many people to be positive? Well, they wanted to scare people into taking the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So the more people that supposedly had this fake disease, the more likely they were to think they needed a vaccine to protect themselves. It really scared them to find out these enormous numbers of people were getting this thing, like it was spreading really fast. Well, the truth is it didn't spread at all.
Right.
Okay, but let me go back quickly to explain some science behind the danger of not having a unique primer. And I'm going to talk about it in the context of using that primer that was part of our human genome. Like I said, it was 18 base pairs long. And a lot of people might say, well, maybe it was a coincidence. You know, maybe they chose a primer that happened to be common between the SARS-2 virus and the human genome. But that is statistically not possible. And here's what I mean. To determine the likelihood of matching something in 18 positions that have a 1 in 4 chance at each position, because remember, there's 4 different nucleotides that can go in at each position.
Correct.
To determine the likelihood of that, you've got to take 1/4 and multiply it by itself 18 times. That would be the likelihood that a coincidence gave us the same sequence between the primer and what was found in the human genome, okay? And 1/4 to the 18th power is roughly 1 over 70 billion. So the chance that it's a coincidence is zero.
Okay.
It's 1 over 70 billion. And remember, there's only 8 billion people on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So let's be real about it. Okay? It's every bit as rare as finding three people with the same fingerprints. It's just not going to happen, you know? Okay. Now, let's talk about, since we know one way that the deception occurred, and that is by using a primer that was found in the human genome, let's talk about another more common way that, the deception occurred in order to beef up the positive cases, to scare people into getting the vaccine, because that was the ultimate thing, and I'll tell you why the vaccine was very important later. Of course, part of it was money, you know, because the governments paid the vaccine manufacturers a lot of money.
They did.
And, of course, they bribed the hospitals for all these positive cases and everything. So the whole thing was based on a test that could be manipulated and cause a lot of false positives. Okay?
Correct.
All right. The other way that we were able to manipulate the PCR test, which I've touched on already, is by running the cycles up above 40. Because, again, the enzymes wear out, mistakes are made, and after about 28 is the scientific number. After about 28 cycles, you can pretty much find anything in there. Okay? Now, to make an analogy with our game telephone one more time, because it really is a great analogy. Imagine if you've got your 30 kids in an air-conditioned room, and they're really motivated to do a successful turn of the game telephone and get the same sentence that the teacher started with, okay? So the room's air-conditioned, and they're going to get 30 minutes extra recess time if they do it right one time.
Got it.
Versus a room that's not air-conditioned and the temperature's 100 degrees like it's been lately in Florida. Okay, and all the kids are sweating and they're restless. They're much more likely to make a mistake if they're sweating and it's 100 degrees than they are if it's 70 degrees and air conditioned.
Yes.
And that's what I mean by all the heating and cooling cycles in the PCR method that cause those enzymes to get worn out. It's like the kids in the 100 degree room. They're going to be worn out with their memory and not concentrate on what was told them to tell the next person quite so perfectly.
Correct.
You follow me?
Yes.
Okay. So the fact that the WHO recommended that everyone run the cycle threshold above 40 was just a recipe for disaster. But, of course, they used the disaster to take advantage of the people so that they could get a lot of positive tests, even though the SARS-2 genome was not in their nasopharynx, let's say, it's still red positive because the primers could find anything. Mm-hmm. Okay?
So you're saying multitudes of people that tested positive may or may not have had even a portion of the pathogen.
Yeah. Actually, to tell you the truth, none of them had it.
No, okay.
Zero, because the pathogen didn't exist.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. They needed to create a test that was so manipulable in a nefarious way that they could tell everybody in the world, or, you know, 80% of us, that we had this terrible contagious disease when the disease didn't even exist.
Right.
That's how big of a fraud this was.
We talked about this a couple of times.
And again, I've proved that the disease did not exist. I proved that SARS-2 did not exist, and therefore COVID-19 did not exist. Because I refuted those three things that the virologists used to establish the existence of a virus.
Because we have some listeners today that may not have heard that in our previous interview. Take about a minute and tell us why you believe that COVID or SARS did not exist, or COVID-19.
Okay. I'll take 1 minute.
1 minute.
Because we're so
I just want to recap that so that our listeners will understand why we're passionate about what you're saying.
Absolutely. There are three things that virologists use to prove the existence of a virus. just three things. One of them is photographic evidence. Mm-hmm. In other words, they can take an electron microscope and take a photograph of the end result of cytopathic effects. Okay? And when they do that, they see round bodies there that they call viruses. But those are, they're almost identical to things we call exosomes that are released when cells die anyway.
Okay.
Okay? And even the Journal of Virology will tell you that you cannot tell the difference between a virus particle and an exosome. And they have a vested interest in the existence of viruses. Correct. Obviously, their whole magazine is based on it. Okay. So the photographic evidence is debunked. They cannot tell the difference.
Got it.
Now, what about the cytopathic effect evidence? Because the theory is that viruses, which are just a capsule with genetic material inside, they have no respiratory system, no circulatory system, no excretory system, and they have no way of making their own energy.
Got it.
So they are what we call obligate intracellular parasites. They cannot make copies of themselves without getting inside a cell and hijacking the replication machinery to make many, many copies of themselves, okay, based on their genetic material. It has all the instructions in it. They make many, many copies of themselves, and then when they've made all these copies, the cell breaks open and all of them get released to go infect other cells or be exhaled out of a person's mouth to get into another person's mouth and infect those cells. Mm-hmm. That's the theory. That's the cytopathic effect theory.
Got it.
However, we have now done experiments, and the two people that have done them are Stefan Lenka did it in 2021. He released his results in April of 2021. He's a German former virologist now. And John Enders did it back in 1954 because he won the Nobel Prize for this process, the cytopathic effect process, demonstrating that viruses do go inside cells, make them break open, and release copies. Those copies that you can't tell the difference between exosomes and viruses.
Correct.
Okay? John Enders even wrote in his paper that won him the Nobel Prize that the result of doing it without the human specimen is indistinguishable from doing it with the human specimen. The human specimen supposedly has viruses in it, but when you don't add the human specimen, you know for sure you're not adding the virus.
Right.
But for somehow the Nobel Prize Committee just ignored that very important control experiment that John Enders did. And even John Enders interpreted it wrong. He thought that there were other viruses in the... And he did it with the measles virus, by the way. He deduced that there were some other viruses in the monkey kidney cells, you know, which is the cell line that's used for cytopathic effects. And the reason they use that cell line, I hate to say that it's this sneaky, but they use monkey kidney cells because the antibiotics that they use to keep bacteria out of the mix are gentamicin, and they also use amphotericin B, which is an antifungal, and they're toxic to kidney cells. Mm. So that's what's causing the cells to break open and release exosomes is all that's happening. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that they're viruses. It's a big pseudoscientific fraud.
Okay, real quick.
And the final thing that I want to say for the listeners that didn't get to hear yesterday is that the whole genetic sequencing thing is a fraud because we cannot find even one viral particle in the entire 5 years in an intact viral particle. And I tell the virologists this, and they say, oh, there aren't enough of them in there. They'll admit we haven't found a viral particle yet. But they'll say there aren't enough in each person. And I say, well, then what's making us so sick?
Good question.
Okay? In other words, I'm disproving what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, how can you get sick from something that's so minuscule you can't even find 100 nanometer virus particle in there? And then they say, well, they're all intracellular, too. And then I say, well, how could it get transmitted from one person to another if they never come out of the cells and get exhaled into another person's mouth? You know, if they're inside the cells, they can't be transmitted. It wouldn't be contagious. And yet they're talking about how terribly contagious this is. You follow me? How stupid it sounds?
Absolutely.
Okay. So anyway, the genetic sequencing is a total fraud. It creates a genome that exists only in silico. And I made the point yesterday about the difference between in vitro, which is in a petri dish, in vivo, which is in a living organism, like a person, versus in silico, which of course is a takeoff on the word silicon, which is what the chips in computers are made out of, silicon chips, as we all know.
Correct.
So we call that in silico. And if you want an analogy there, take Homer Simpson or somebody, okay? Now that's a person. That's an in silico person, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That Homer Simpson doesn't exist in the real world.
That's right.
Only in silico.
Right.
Right? He's on our TV screens.
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, I think that AI is starting to create women for lonely men that are in silico also. In other words, they can pay some money and have a girlfriend that appears on their computer screen every day and will talk to them about their problems. Believe it or not, this is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or it's already here, actually.
Already here. Fast track.
Yes. So that is the summary of why I've proved right there. I debunked all three ways that virologists demonstrate that viruses exist. I've debunked all three.
So quick question.
Therefore, the disease doesn't exist.
Okay.
That's very important. You can't have the disease without the causative agent,
right,
according to the germ theory, which is false.
A quick question.
Yes, sir.
For a transition. If that is the case, and
yes,
I'm in agreement, then the question that listeners asking, what killed so many people?
What killed so many people is other diseases that were rebranded as COVID-19.
That's what I wanted the people
and
to hear.
COVID-19 did not exist. It was, in most cases, it was the flu.
Yes.
What we call the flu. And remember, Jim called in and pointed out a page from my book where I had put a graphic from the World Health Organization that showed that there were 38 million deaths in 2019 worldwide from the flu. It's
yes,
a very common disease, and it's deadly, the flu, because it causes pneumonia,
yes,
as you know. And in 2020, the year they decided to unleash this ridiculous made-up disease, the flu cases dropped to 1,500.
Yes.
That is a ratio.
Worldwide from 38 million to 1,500.
Right, which is a ratio of 25,333.
Yes.
So, in other words, they rebranded the flu as COVID, obviously.
So, a question that we need to get to in the last few minutes.
Yes, sir.
What about lockdowns? Did it benefit? Did it help? Was that a protocol that should have been used, or did it have rippling, devastating, lasting effects?
It was a disaster. It is the greatest public health disaster in the history of mankind, to lock down healthy people like that. And let me tell you why. As a physics person, I was trained to reason from first principles. First principles are things that are the most fundamental truths about something, okay, that you're reasoning from. So that you can start with something you're absolutely certain is true and then make logical conclusions from it, you're always going to come to a logical answer. You shouldn't just jump in halfway on a logical sequence, because someone may have made a mistake earlier on in the reasoning. Mm-hmm. You with me?
Right.
So we always break things down into the most fundamental truths we know about something, and those are called first principles. Well, in my analysis of lockdowns, which I discussed with Dr. Bhattacharya an awful lot when we did our 24 hours together, I really drilled down on lockdowns and made... I wish this show was televised because I could show you some of the slides I made for Dr. Bhattacharya to prove my point that lockdowns not only were horrible, including all the secondary effects that they had, such as causing people to starve to death because the lockdowns shut the factories down and then all the shipping in the world had to reroute through China because China did not shut their factories down.
Right.
And they wanted to gain market share.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept their factories open. And the ships had to start routing through China so they'd have something to sell,
mm-hmm,
and ship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they stopped taking food to places like South Sudan. And so a lot of people starved to death. The WHO predicts that 80 million people died because of it.
Mm.
Because of the rerouting of the shipping lanes and so forth. Okay. Getting off the beaten track a little there. But the I found an error in the first principles that everyone believes, including all the epidemiologists in the world, about lockdowns. I thought of it. I came up with the insight. And whenever there's a a first principle that is wrong. Remember I said it's the most basic truth about something. Whenever there's a first principle that is wrong and you discover it, it's automatically going to cause a paradigm shift. Now, I was saving this for my third volume, but I'm going to release it right now on your radio station.
Good.
The first principle that I discovered about lockdowns that will make a paradigm shift in our understanding of what lockdowns are is that lockdowns, everyone assumes they're ways of separating everybody, right?
Correct.
That's so that it wouldn't be contagious and spread. But actually, lockdowns are a way of putting people together. Mm-hmm. So the first principle that lockdowns are ways of separating individuals so they can't spread a virus as quickly, that was the reason for the lockdowns,
supposedly,
remember, is wrong. Mm-hmm. Lockdowns actually put people together. They don't separate them. And this is a major thing. This will change epidemiology. You know, and I thought of it. Believe dumb old me, just was sitting there one night and realizing, oh my God, lockdowns bring people together. They don't separate them. Because think about in your own household. If you have a house, normally the boys are out playing on the soccer field or going to school, right? Your wife is shopping. You're coming into your place here and doing your work. Or you're in your office at home writing a book. You do a lot of things, mm-hmm. so you could be anywhere, right? Yep. Okay. But lockdowns didn't allow that to happen, so they brought all these families together all over the world. You understand? Mm-hmm. And houses were among the worst places you could be during a disease that was purportedly one in which aerosols spread the disease from one person to another.
That is
we
right.
know that didn't happen in this
right.
case because there was no SARS-2,
right.
so there were no aerosols. But according to the manufactured narrative that the government was telling us, people spread this from person to person by aerosols, even though we never found a single virion. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
It was all a big lie, obviously. And I think what happened to the government is they got in over their head, just like a little boy who lies to his mother and has to keep telling more and more lies, you know, to convince her that he wasn't lying, if you know what I mean. And eventually, of course, he digs himself into a terrible hole, and the mother knows he's lying like crazy.
That sounds like Dr. Fauci.
Well, all of them. The whole medical establishment did this. The CDC did it. Everybody did it. They just kept lying and lying and lying to try to correct the lies that they'd already made, if you know what I mean. Just like a little boy who keeps lying to his mother. You know, where were you? Oh, I was at Jimmy's house. Well, Jimmy's out of town. Well, I was at Jimmy's house, but we had 9 other friends there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has to keep lying and lying and lying. Even though Jimmy wasn't there, other friends were there swimming in his pool. Well, wait a minute. It's winter. The pool is empty. Oh, well, we made a pool in the living room because their parents weren't there. You know, he keeps lying and lying and lying. Okay. This is what happened. Now, there is so much more to this deceit that's in my book. That, of course, I cannot talk about in a couple of hours with you. But I know it all. It's in the book, and it's an incredibly interesting read to find out all the deception that occurred. And let me tell you something that's very important. Remember, the vaccines, let's talk about the vaccines a little bit. People are very concerned about that. The vaccines were lipid nanoparticles in which messenger RNA was placed, mapping to these so-called spike protein. But I've already demonstrated that there was no virus. So if there's no virus, there's no spike protein. They called it the spike protein so that the people would be thinking they were making an immunological reaction to this thing, spike protein, and it would protect them from the virus, right?
Correct.
But there was no thing sticking off of a spherical object anywhere. It was all made up. The whole viral illness was a ruse so that they could get people to allow them, the evildoers that organized this, to inject them with something that would go into their cells, hijack their replication machinery, which is what a messenger RNA would do,
right.
The ribosomes and so forth, and make this poison protein. So we shouldn't even call it the spike protein anymore. It's some poison protein they wanted to make in our bodies, and I actually know the reason for that, which is a little bit of speculation, but I have a close friend and colleague named Spartacus. He has to go by that name because he's worried about the government knowing who he is. which they probably could find out anyway, but I even recommended him that he keep using this name. He's a younger guy. He's a brilliant person. I call him my protege who has surpassed his teacher. But Spartacus has a wonderful timeline that's coming out in Volume 2, which is a tale of three timelines, that explains how the powers that be that really control the world, and you know, everyone says, is it the Bilderberg Group? Is it the this, the that? But I devoted 30 pages at the end of Volume 1 to explaining who's behind this. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that if we have time. But just to get back to Spartacus, because it's so important, his job to contribute to my 2,000-page book, because he's so brilliant, I really wanted him to contribute to it, was to look at the timeline of the government's effort to control the people's thoughts and behaviors. Mm-hmm. This could be used on the battlefield. If you could get into a general's mind and confuse him and control his thoughts and behaviors, you'd win the war, for example. Okay. But back in about 1950, from then until present day, Spartacus made a beautiful timeline of all the things that have been done to control people's thoughts. And before you think everything's crazy here, that you've got this crazy doctrine here talking about the government trying to control people's thoughts, I was an MIT physics major, like I said a couple times, and I take my medical reputation as a surgeon very seriously. I'm not going to say anything that I can't prove or that I announce beforehand is a little bit of speculation. But let me tell you the evidence for it. We know now that the spike protein, whatever that poison was that they had producing in everybody's body, that inflames the blood-brain barrier. And right now, we're making these little nanobots that can get through the blood-brain barrier if there's holes punched in it, which is the layman's way to say inflames the blood-brain barrier, because it makes it more like a sieve. It allows things through. Those nanobots are going to be able to affect the action potentials of our neurons and start affecting what we think, our thoughts. Okay?
Yeah.
And that is the purpose of all this. It's just the next step. Now, as we know, 30 seconds. Okay. Elon Musk has created a company called Neuralink, but you have to do a craniotomy on somebody's head. You have to cut a hole in their bone to put his device inside.
That's right.
But if you've got holes in the blood-brain barrier, you're going to be able to put nanobots in someone's IV and control their thoughts.
And that's where it's headed.
And that's where it's headed. And that was the reason for the so-called spike protein, in my opinion.
So finally, ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you again, Dr. Schefthal's book, Sanctioned, The COVID Murders. Sanctioned, The COVID Murders. Find it on Amazon.com, and we look forward to our next show as we once again face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295, FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with First Conservative Baptist Church. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Tune in tonight at 11 for a replay of today's Let's Face the Issues broadcast on WBOB AM 600 and 101.1.